So when I started feeling anxious and ill, I'm like, why am I having such a hard time with just like social interaction here or like presenting? And but then when I was doing something with Joe, like all those sort of self-awareness, like crippling anxiety just went away. And it felt like, okay, it's because I believe so much in this. I just want this so bad that I'm not worrying about how others are perceiving me because I feel so connected to this work.
Hey, it's Adam Schoenfeld. Welcome back to the Built in Seattle podcast, where Seattle's top entrepreneurs, investors, and leaders share their stories and their lessons from behind the scenes. If you like this show, you might also like my personal newsletter. Each week, I share a lesson, a question, or an idea that I've picked up while learning from others. Subscribe at adaminseattle.com. My guest on this episode is Nick Martin. He's co-founder and CEO at Joe Coffee. They're helping small coffee shops set up online ordering and order ahead so the little guys can have a digital experience like Starbucks. His business journey started helping his parents build storage sheds in their backyard. So he has a love for family business that he talked about a lot. He shared his burn the boats moment, and he talked about overcoming anxiety by connecting with his work. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm here with the one, the only, Nick Martin. Hey, Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Adam, thanks for having me.
You're probably not the only because you have, that's like a fairly common name, but I'm sticking with it.
I've had this long running goal since I was a kid and to be like the top result on searches. And I'm still not anywhere near close to that. So
where are you? Are you on the first page yet?
No, not even actually. And there's an offensive lineman, I think named Nick Martin that just retired. And so I've gotten a lot of messages about that, but I got some work to do. We'll get there. We'll see.
Hopefully this will help. We'll get you one more link.
Thank you. Yeah. That's actually my overall goal on all this.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm glad that myself and our listeners get to benefit from that goal. Look, it looks like you've been getting a lot more attention in the business, particularly lately with COVID and just the mission that you have fits the times. Can you just talk a little bit about what's been going on with Joe Coffee in the last year? This sort of became a big tailwind for you as I understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of crazy. We were actually marking the day a few days ago on 1 year since sort of the COVID shutdowns and that whole experience and what that looked like for the business. So, you know, rewind a year, we were progressing really steadily as a company. Things were going really well. We were growing between 15 and 30% per month heading into February. Things were looking really solid going into March. Had the COVID shutdown, didn't know what was going to happen. And I remember seeing in the Slack channel, my brother messaging being like, we're going to have to get all hands on deck tomorrow because we have like hundreds of coffee shops signing up through the site. And we need to figure out how to serve them all and make sure this is a good experience. And so we initiated this whole on the fly company reorg from an outbound recruiting shops to let's make sure we're giving everybody a good experience. And these owners are coming to us, basically making their bet on their business and their livelihood moving forward on our solution. So we had a tremendous amount of a sense of duty in doing the right thing. And our system was getting strained to the max, right? When you're planning tech and architecture around 20 to 30% a month, and then all of a sudden it's something that 3X'd us in a month and then 3X's again. And we've had this 10X tailwind over the course of the next few months. It's had a lot of major impacts on every part of the business, how we thought about ourselves in the marketplace. And so it's been a wild ride. We really focused on with that tailwind. I made the bet on, hey, instead of focusing on growing and recruiting more shops, let's make the bet right now to invest in technology, product, and start making the transition from a, hey, we're doing a hack to fit and figuring out where the signal is and what kind of business this really is to, we need to become a world-class product and tech organization as fast as possible because it's going to be value-adding for our partners. It's the right thing for us as a company and it's the right bets to make in terms of what we need to do moving forward. So it's been a wild ride this year and last year and happy that we made good on the things that were most important and have a ton of opportunity ahead of us.
I want to unpack this because it's such a unique story. Yeah. So talk to me more about the sense of duty. Mm-hmm. What was at stake for your customers here, right? Because these are small businesses. These are coffee shops that you're serving. And like COVID hits and like the whole dynamic changed as I understood it for them and like where you fit in their mind. So what were the stakes and how did that sense of duty like show up in terms of what your customers needed from you?
What was interesting is we've long held the hypothesis, right? We launched Joe with this idea that digital experiences are increasingly impacting how people make decisions, how consumers make decisions. Corporate giants have a bunch of advantages already, and this is going to be one thing that tilts the scales, maybe more than any other dynamic in their favor moving forward. And so we had this sense of duty of, look, we want to live in a world where small business can thrive, where especially in the coffee category, they're this really unique business where these owners, these entrepreneurs, when we did surveys on our partners and coffee shop owners, making money wasn't even in the top three for them. It was giving back to the community, creating spaces where people feel a sense of belonging, creating really great product and experiences for their customers. And that's like, what a beautiful world to live in. That's what we have always had a sense of duty of preserving and helping to thrive. Starting with coffee, small business as a whole is something we're really passionate about. So in a moment of crisis, when this happens, and we switched from, hey, we're building tools that are going to allow them to grow and compete and do better and you make more money so that they can take the weekends off or hire that extra barista so they're not working so many shifts behind the counter, to, hey, this is a lifeline for coffee shops. At a time when these small businesses are going under left and right, they're making a bet on us.
You mentioned that a passion for small business was at the heart of this. Where did that come
from? My brother and I, when we launched Joe, if you rewind and look back to how we grew up, you can see a really clear pattern there. We're the first in our family to go to college, to put food on the table. My mom and my dad built lawn and garden storage sheds in our backyard in Central Washington growing up. And that's very much a seasonal business. And when we say small business, when you're building sheds and prefabbing in a garage outside the house and you have the sheds in display in the yard, it was really family business. Our summers as kids would be spent on sites, helping put walls together and things like that. And so that experience, what was really interesting about that is we grew up that put food on the table until we were in high school. That business, we were put out of business by, if you go up to a Home Depot or a Costco and they have the sheds outside, right? That the lower price points and the convenience of it and all of that just tanked our business once that started becoming popular, which was a devastating event for our family. And to see both sides of that, pre that, we did not make a lot of money at all. We spent times as kids on free and reduced lunch, but there was a tremendous amount of dignity and pride that comes with owning a small business, even if you're not really making much money from it. And just that self-determination and the freedom there. And so from very early on, that was something that we just saw as worthy of preserving for what it does for people and access to those types of the opportunity for entrepreneurship, no matter how small the scale. And so my brother and I, all grown up, we were for years wanted to do a startup together. And we had a lot of ideas, and the common thread was always, hey, how can we bring tools to empower small businesses or entrepreneurs in these settings to make small business ownership more possible and easier at a time when I think more of the world is becoming corporate and giants and scaling sameness to every corner in every neighborhood. There's a richness that's lost if small business is not given the conditions to thrive and compete. And so that's been a really powerful and visceral part of why launching Joe and our mission has been so important.
That's an incredible backstory. Have you seen parallels between your customers running these coffee shops and mom and dad like doing the backyard business? Has that kind of played out as you've gotten to interact with all these small business owners? Are the common threads there and how do those show up?
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, I think that still one of the most satisfying things for me is when new coffee shops come on board and you go to the Instagram page and check them out. And so many of them are family-owned businesses. Mm. It's almost like trauma bonds that we've had with these owners through COVID. And we worked hard on helping them market and finding ways to keep them alive. And that sort of spirit of ingenuity and resourcefulness, it's incredibly inspiring to see. And how, I mean, we have stories of owners who lost a spouse to COVID and weeks later were back in the shop serving customers because they felt a responsibility to be there for their community in the midst of mourning. And there's this unshakable, incredibly admirable spirit about folks that launch a family business. And it's a certain quality that you can look in someone's eyes and see it. I don't know if I could ever sufficiently articulate what that is, but I think that when you see it, I absolutely see the same look with in my parents' eyes when we were growing up. And it's this spirit that's just refuses to be beat, and it makes what we do incredibly rewarding.
I love that. How do you bring that spirit into your business, which is a tech business where scale matters and you're trying to serve thousands or tens of thousands of customers, and like the way we all think in tech of, you know, this kind of scale and making everything, you said sameness, like in a way you have to have that in a tech business, in a software business. Like, how have you brought that spirit into the way you operate your own company?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I think the thing that best encapsulates that is we have a value, we call it, which is consumer obsessed and people centric. And that really came with intentional sort of tension and opposition between two ideas. And the consumer obsessed, that's cliche in tech and everybody does that, but it very much ends up being abstracted into all we care about is the numbers and its metrics and its KPIs, which is great. And that's incredibly important for creating a high performing organization, but it needs to be counterbalanced with the people centric piece, which is the, like, at the end of the day, the goal here is to make life better. And to me, it's not one or the other. It's we can make decisions with the business that create value for all stakeholders without, and if you take it a step further and it starts going into the realm of exploitation, then you've gone a step too far. And if you can remember that humans are at the center of that, then you can make really great decisions. So one tangible example of that is how we thought about our pricing strategy with Joe. There's a world, you see these big third-party marketplaces that took a lot of heat, especially in the midst of COVID, where they're charging 30%. And now this is the only sales channel for these businesses. And in a lot of cases, governments had to step in and take action to do that. And just because a shop owner may pay 30% for something, because that takes it up to like, they're profitable by a penny, or maybe they're not profitable at all, but they see it as a marketing expense. We took a different lens and we said, hey, how much do these coffee shops pay for card not present purchases, because the cost structure is different there. And how might we, and that's our starting point. Like, cool, we don't want coffee shops to have to pay more than they would on really inferior solutions to what we're building with Joe. And then we can make our job about how do we apply technology and creative thinking to then lower the cogs on that payment processing cost so that we can be more profitable, and then create stellar consumer experiences that increase customer lifetime value, so that our goals are in alignment with the coffee shops and the small business owners. And we're not, it's not about taking more from them. It's the more profitable we are means that we're delivering that added value to our coffee shops. And so I think that there's an equilibrium there that can be struck. And that sort of principle, I think, is at the heart of how we look at business challenges and what we want to be as a company as we scale up.
Now, you guys are, you've raised some money, and so you have investors. And I'm curious, as you've done that, has this principle come into conflict in any way? Or have you had to think about how to like maintain that as you take on investors and raise your growth goals? How's that played out?
Yeah, I think that is definitely a large influence on these conversations. I think there's a lot of partnering with the right types of investors. I think there's a lot of being very clear about the vision and what's at the heart of the mission up front. And so far, because we've had really great partners in our corner, including folks like Flying Fish, VC here in Seattle, and because this is a space that is just so ripe for innovation and disruption, there's a ton of value to be had that drives revenue and profitability, so that it hasn't been a huge point of friction, or we haven't had to make compromises. At least to this point, it's very much been, we've been intentional enough about our model and how we monetize, that as we get more traction and prove different parts of the business, that is really profitable, and it hasn't had to be something that we've needed to, you know, look at a different way or find ways to dig deeper into seeing exactly how much more coffee shops would pay. To me, it's generally, and how I would expect things to move forward is I think that there is a sufficiently innovative or creative solutions that we'll always be able to get ahead of that, I guess is what I'm saying. There's a lot of value add for coffee shops that we can monetize really well against that create disproportionate value.
It's thinking like the pie. I can't remember which podcast guest I had on, but you're thinking about growing the pie, mm-hmm. right? Versus taking more, which totally resonates. It's interesting. Flying Fish. I just had Heather Redman on, I think it was episode 38, and she's super community oriented. So it's funny because this totally fits with the way that she thinks. So I can see what you're talking about, where the right people around the table that have similar mindset could make a world of difference.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Those conversations with the whole Flying Fish team, including Jeff Harris, who we work really closely with, and Heather, they were definitely in the same spirit of what we were trying to accomplish. And when we had connected with them, it was really evident that they wanted to do things different than investment was done in Seattle. And they wanted to take swings and be a little more aggressive and fresh and innovative. And so they've been a really great partner for us.
Love that. So I want to go back a little bit to March of 2018. You said you had a burn the boats kind of moment there. I wanted to hear about that. What went down and what was going on at that time?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So my brother and I started bootstrapping Joe as an idea and paying out of pocket for devs on the side as all the way back to like late 2014. And this was like pre-Starbucks running their mobile order ahead pilot. So, you know, now Starbucks is doing 25% of all their sales are through order ahead, but back then it was zero. And we were, we had the mobile ahead or order ahead and a network of coffee shops. We had that vision. And so we had started all the way back then and we're just grinding. And there's this whole set of steps up to that point of, you know, on our personal lives, it's like Brendan had his first kid. And one example is he spent some of his paternity leave learning to code to build the prototype for Joe so that we could move faster on this vision and all that stuff. So anyway, there was just this very like scrappy and just gritty journey to get to where we were in 2018. And in 2018, so I was working full-time at Zillow. He was working full-time at a different startup. And we were just seeing like enough signal and traction. So we kind of got our prototype to a functional spot where we were starting to learn some things about the business. And our plan was to get a handful of coffee shops on board in Seattle and just start building a business case and then go try to raise some funding. And we had 75 coffee shops that just found us online and signing up. And we were trying to do this with sending out these like $40 Amazon Fire tablets, and just really the tech was not good. When they talk about MVP and being uncomfortable, it was like really it was really uncomfortable. But we had circled Coffee Fest for August. I think this was like Marchish of 2018 at that time, and we circled Coffee Fest, and we said, "Look, man, we can't. There's no more of this. Just like trying to moonlight and mitigate risk and that sort of thing. We got to just go for it. So let's put a stake in the ground and be like, hell or high water, we're going to make this happen." We targeted Coffee Fest for August of that year. And it was like, I think $2,000 or $3,000 for a booth. Like, we're buying a booth. We're going to have this to a place that we can start selling Joe. And this is going to be the moment. Like, we're going to make this happen. I put in my 2 weeks notice at Zillow. Brendan did the same thing. We both just took freelance jobs on the sides and we spent our days just talking to coffee shops and really moving things forward. At that time, we went and we recruited our tech co-founder in Lenny, who actually taught my brother how to code through General Assembly. So we recruited him on board and said, "Hey man, if you can turn down that job offer that you got from Google and do this coffee thing with us, we'll pay you like a fourth of what you would get paid at Google just to work on this. We'll pay you out of pocket until we can get funding." That was very much our burn the boats moments. We were like, there's no turning back here. The money I was earning from freelancing was half of what I had before. Plus we were paying Lenny out of pocket. And mind you, I just had identical twin boys at the time that were, I think, under 1 year old. So having that conversation with your wife and being like, "Hey, this is probably the last or the worst moment to do this, but we got to go all in." And I have an amazing wife that was fully supportive of that and was cool with me making those moves, and it worked out. So then fast forward to August, the serendipity of it. We were on the showroom floor at Coffee Fest, and the our funding round with Flying Fish. We were watching. I was signing the docs on my phone, and we got the deposit that day. We our seed round of investment from Flying Fish and a group of angels in the area was deposited while we were on the showroom floor pitching coffee shops about Joe.
I love that because that's the real like struggle of that stage. It's just so murky and ambiguous, and you're just scrapping, especially being a first-time founder and maybe not having capital and access to the people. I'm curious, like, more about the conversation you had with your wife.
Yeah.
And what gave you conviction? Like, what did you tell her as to why it was worth this? Because you had a lot on the line, as you said, right? Like, you gave up a good job. You have to come out of pocket with what money you can scrape together. You've got obligations with family. Like, what gave you conviction to put all that on the line?
So that's a really good question. I, before Joe, before I made that jump, that real leap, and I would never have gotten, any chance I get, give my brother all the praise in the world for this, because he's the one that has the instinct to just like dream big, not be afraid of falling, get in the arena, so to speak, and go for it. And I was always very much more risk averse and like calculated. But the years before I made that decision to just go for it with Joe, I was working in corporate roles at Microsoft and Zillow, two great companies, a lot of great, you know, experiences there. But for a combination of reasons, I was actually dealing with a lot of really intense anxiety to the point where I was getting like generalized panic disorder. I had to get on medication actually for it, and had to understand like why it was. And when I look back on it, it was like that big corporate environment, the really rigid hierarchy and very siloed experiences, and not feeling super connected to the work on things, not being really feeling like I was able to create, engage, and just work in a manner that felt conducive and in harmony with whatever my own DNA and style was, it was creating just like really putting me in a really bad mental place. And I have Zillow, especially, was an amazing company and actually relieved a ton of that. But ultimately, if you're doing something or you're in the type of work that as you go up or as your responsibilities increase and you're not feeling really engaged, or it's not whatever sparking for the right reasons, or something's out of alignment, I feel like your body starts really telling you that. And that's what I felt like I was experiencing. Like, I needed to make a change. When as Joe was like doing things on the side, the long game was always to like either work at a startup. I just knew that I needed a more fluid, creative ability to like move horizontally and just dig in and be inspired. Like, I needed that type of environment for me to thrive and feel good and be the best version of myself. So once it came to the point where I was like, Vanessa is my wife's name, I want to do this. She had seen that journey and had been a part of really helping me along. And she's as much a partner in this as anyone, and deserves as much credit for Joe and where we're at, I think, as anyone, in being that supportive just rock to get us there. So when it came to it, there was this sort of moment in time where I remember having a conversation with her about just really wrestling with this. And she looked me in the eye and said, "Hey, I have no doubt that Joe is going to be wildly successful someday. And I think you could do it. And I think you should." And that was like that moment of clarity. All of a sudden, that little bit of validation from the person I respect most in the world was all I needed to get from the ambivalence of shouldn't I, to just, okay, whatever it takes, I'm going to make this happen. And after that moment forward, making those decisions, not to say I'm the dad of two, you know, 4.5-year-old boys, there's always tension and concerns around how much, I don't want that to compromise or anything with the family. But that gave me the conviction I needed to be able to commit fully, set my mind to something, and like I said, hell or high water, make it come to fruition.
So your body's yelling at you and you're having all this anxiety. And how do you determine that the right answer is, oh, I need to go find this inspiration, or I need to go on this deep journey, versus, oh, I just need to go to the gym? Are you just good at tuning in to your own kind of gut and heart? Or Is that something that like that there was a process behind that of identifying like what the right solution was to that problem?
For, definitely a process. So like the initial things were very much what you mentioned. It was like, okay, exercise, meditation, mindfulness. And then it's okay, that only did so much. Then it was like, okay, this feels deeper than me taking some time. And not to downplay that, because I think those things are extremely powerful. But I think just internally, I was like, I don't think that's sufficient. I feel like there's just something more there. And part of it was, gosh, I had been in like the Microsoft realm and everything for so long. I was like, maybe I just need a change of scenery and just fresh challenges and ideas. And I just need to do something different, which is, so I went out looking for different roles and really focused on getting a role at Zillow, because I'd heard such great things about culture and all these things, and made that move from Microsoft to Zillow. And it was extremely refreshing. The leadership from Spencer Raskoff and just how that company was run was just like exactly what I needed at the time. But then 12 months into it, I started feeling some of the same things come back. And I'm like, okay, I feel really good about the culture here. I feel really good about how things are run. I think it really is just, I'm not doing the type of work that is leaving me feeling the right way. For whatever reason, I just felt like I was called to do something different. So when I started feeling anxious at Zillow, I'm like, why am I having such a hard time with just like social interaction here or like presenting? And, but then when I was doing something with Joe, like all those sort of self-awareness, like crippling anxiety just went away. And it felt like, okay, it's because I believe so much in this. I just want this so bad that I'm not worrying about how others are perceiving me, because I feel so connected to this work. And if I have a choice, I want to wake up every day feeling that way. And I think that I'm going to get the best version of myself and write the best story with my life if I'm in a position where I feel so compelled and feel so driven by a mission or what we're trying to accomplish that I don't even worry about all the things that are creating anxiety for me in other settings. So that's becoming much more clear as I try to, you know, pin down one variable at a time and make some moves.
I love the way you think about that. One of my favorite questions to ask entrepreneurs is, would you still be proud of this if it failed? Would you still be glad you did it if it failed? And like the way you found that is, it's pretty awesome. I'm psyched for you. I bet there's a lot of parallels with your customers too, in their journey of that kind of emotion and needing to be doing that, needing to go on that journey.
Absolutely. It's interesting, especially up here in Seattle, the number of former techies that are running coffee shops that we come across is really interesting. One of our highest volume partners, Cloud City Coffee up in North Seattle, run by Jill Killen. She was former, I think, like project manager at Microsoft before she opened a coffee shop. So I think there's definitely parallels there for sure.
I love it. All right. Maybe we got some next coffee shop owners listening. All right. I want to be respectful of your time. Let's wrap this up with the supersonic six.
All right. Let's do it.
Number one, how much coffee do you drink? And this, of course, might be a special one for you, but how much coffee do you drink, Nick?
Yeah. So I drink about 3 cups of coffee a day. I thought that was a lot until I was really researching this, and the average daily coffee drinker, which is like 65% of Americans at this point, average 3 cups of coffee a day. So I'm like perfectly average, and the US isn't even in the top 10 in terms of coffee consumption per capita. So I feel well within the not shame, ashamed zone based on the stats.
I love it. Okay. Number two, what's one other Seattle company that you're following or studying right now?
Yeah, I've been really looking at Remitly lately. I love just their model around uplifting immigrants and their families. I'm married to a first gen Mexican that's very much a service that they have used, and it has been a really delightful experience. And it's connected so deeply in so many different ways. So I've really been following them and really what they're doing. Also, sorry to, I guess you said one, but Axon is another one that's really interesting that I've been looking at.
Love it. For those of you who want to hear from Matt Oppenheimer, the CEO at Remitly, tune into episode 11, I think it was. Roughly episode 11, if I have that wrong, you can figure it out. Number three, who's one Seattle person that you're following or learning from right now?
There's a few of these, and one that I'm actually just really admiring right now is Yifan Zhang. She's the CEO of LoftyM. She's an advisor of ours, actually. And just her leadership style and the sort of vision and strength that she has, and how she led her company through last year through all COVID and all that stuff. She's somebody I really respect in her, how she leads, how she interacts with others, this like spirit of accessibility, but she's just super smart and brilliant, but doesn't make you feel bad that when you're not quite on her intellectual level, you wouldn't even know it until you see her kind of flex her intellectual might. So anyway, she's somebody that it always really impresses me, and I am taking notes.
Love it. Number four, what's the one thing that Seattle needs to improve as a startup hub?
Yeah, this is an interesting one, because I very much come through this lens of my own personal experience and moving from central Washington and rural and agricultural and working class background, jumping into Seattle where I didn't have any networks or access to investor networks. It's just, I remember speaking when we were first trying to get Joe off the ground and speaking to folks that had worked in this space, and they were saying, why don't you do like a friends and family round? And I was like, friends and family round? I have more money than the rest of my family, and it's not much. So that doesn't seem like that's going to go very far. And so getting access to those networks and getting in front of folks and starting to just understand how things work was like a really big obstacle for us. So I would love to see those barriers to entry lowered. And I think that there's a ton of talent, whether it's immigrant founders or first gen, like college student founders and things like that, that haven't been exposed to this language and way of thinking about things and permission to get out there and not just keep your head down and work hard, but go rock the boat and go against the grain and take big swings. If there was more community, more ways to cultivate that, I think that would be really potentially impactful.
Number five, what's one piece of advice you'd give your 20-year-old self?
If I could do it all over again, gosh, I would tell my 20-year-old self to care less about getting financial stability and things like that right out the door after college when I was graduating into a recession, and worry more about learning and finding what sparks you and following that intellectual curiosity. Because I think at the other end of that's where a lot of really, really satisfying sort of learnings and experiences come from. And ultimately, it doesn't, to me, matter how much is in your bank account. If you're doing really satisfying and rewarding work, then you're never going to get more wealthy than that.
Number six, last one. What can this community do to help you? Do you have any calls to action for listeners? Anything you'd like them to put their attention on?
Oh man, yeah. So we're growing really fast right now, and we are recruiting like crazy. So I'm like putting on my chief recruiter hat right now and trying to find just really stellar engineering talent, like everybody in the city seems to be, but also on the growth side. So performance marketing, sales, all that. That's really big. The other thing is try the app out. Most of us have a coffee habit here in Seattle. So, you know, more money we can put into the pockets of small businesses, the better. Jill's a great way to discover and support those businesses without having to slow down, because it's ready when you arrive.
Awesome. What's the URL for the jobs page?
It's in our footer. We have a jobs tab in the footer on our site. So if you go to joe.coffee and look at the bottom, there's a jobs link there that we'll...
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for sharing so openly, and we're excited to watch this continue to take off.
Thanks so much, Adam. Really appreciate the opportunity to share.
Hey, it's Adam again. Quick note before you go. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I am enjoying making it. If you do like it, please leave a rating or a review. That would help other people find it in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you have any feedback, send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com. No underscores, no periods, just adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com.